Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yesterday, so we can talk about it all day today. Maybe it happens today. We talk about it all day tomorrow. Who knows? Joey Bart, number two pick in the 2018 Major League Baseball draft, the future of the San Francisco Giants. He's going to join us from Arizona at 9:10, a little over an hour from now. Joey Bart joins Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. And then Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, set to join us at 9:35. Before we jump into the All-Star game, I'm in your camp, low on Antonio Brown. That's a hard pass. I've been sliding.
Same church, same pew.
Yeah, all the way. He's nuts. He's on Twitter fighting with everybody. It's always an announcement. It's always something. What is it? Art Rooney II, the owner of the team, was going down to his house in Florida. We talked about this briefly last week when you were out there.
Show some class.
He goes down to Florida as the owner of the team and says, you know, Brown's down there. I'd like to meet with you. You know, let's just clear the air. If you're not going to stay, whatever, present the image that there's some stability so maybe the Steelers can get a little bit more for a trade, right? There's a lot of finesse that needs to take place here. Brown pops off. No, I'm not. Decline. Decline. Just declines it. And then, obviously, someone gets in his ear and is like, dude, no, you have to go meet with him. It doesn't matter if you don't want to. This is something you have to do. So then he comes around about 24 hours later and is like, yeah, I'm going to take the meeting. Now, he doesn't announce that. Of course, someone else does. But he repositions itself. But it feels like every other day he's taking the social media to do something that it's just like, man,
let me tell you something.
Niners thing, they might not be good right now, but they got a team. They got a team right now. You got to buy into this concept.
I'll tell you right now, and you can lock this up. They're gonna cut him, and he won't get $10 million a year. He's going to go from 16 to, he was at $17, $18 million a year. He won't get 10 a year.
Oh.
Lock it up.
Whoa.
I know.
That's very bold.
Ooh.
I appreciate you saying that at 8:05. Very bold.
I had to. And lock this up.
No one's going to give up anything for that.
Can we please, for once, back there, mark the tape and actually keep this? Thank you. I know we marked the tape, but we don't often keep the tape.
Nice guy just looked at you like, yeah, okay, Dibs, I'll get right on that.
I'm too busy trying to butcher my next update.
If they cut him, it's no way an organization is going to give him more than $10 million a year.
Okay, that I see. That I see.
That's what I'm talking about.
But there's a two-part process here. He needs to be cut first. You're telling me someone's not going to say, look, fifth-round pick, and then they'll pick up the contract? I mean, right now, if you're the Niners, now suddenly I'm going to, under this theory, if I can get him for a seventh and pick him up, now maybe it's all right. Chemistry doesn't mean that much.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I think they cut him. I don't think that he's going to get anything. I think that he's just killing himself. He doesn't know. And lock this up.
Pretty big financial hit if they cut him.
That's a lot of locks here.
And that's what, but they're like.
Lock this monster.
No, lock this.
Trying to go through the Panama Canal.
Hold Messi.
Oh, lock it. You ready?
I've been locking it this whole time.
The Raiders come up from four, and they might be at the number one pick in the draft.
Don't take your headset off. Still doing a show here.
I just wanted to lock. I
know.
I'm hot.
From a definitive standpoint, that's a beautiful statement, but I'm going to want to ask you a follow-up to that.
So the Raiders have three first-round picks, so they will couple the number four pick and one of their other first-rounders and come up and get Arizona's number one.
For who?
Bosa.
They're going to trade up. They're going to give up that much capital to get Bosa. Not saying it's wrong. I'm just trying to flesh this thing out. It's very interesting.
They're giving up their fourth round pick.
You're standing. You're in the. You finally turned the T-shirt around, so you're wearing it the right way now,
Joe.
It's a V-neck too.
Go to hell, Joe.
So to get a V-neck backwards is probably the most difficult of shirts to put on backwards.
It was dark.
It's a V-back, so Joe. It's not a V-neck. It's a V-back shirt. He's just another reason why he's ahead of the curve on all things fashion. Please continue.
Well, you look at the Raiders.
I don't know where to begin. No. I didn't even get a chance to really dissect Antonio Brown, and now he's got the Raiders going from 4-1.
Okay, hear me out. You have three first round
picks. Three,
yeah.
Okay, so now you give up your fourth, and you give up one pick in the first round. So now a team, Arizona's going to get two first round picks. Actually, so you think...
Okay, so Arizona and Oakland flip-flop, 1-4. Arizona slides back to 4, and they'll also pick up another first, and you're suggesting a fourth rounder as well.
Absolutely, or maybe even another, or even the Raiders second.
If you're Arizona, you're probably doing this.
Hell yeah!
Because you have so many needs, it's like, all right, we'll move back. Unless they love one of the quarterbacks, which
and
they
don't. You're not necessarily... If you're not going to get that quarterback, and if you're not going to give your head coach the opportunity to get that quarterback, then guess what? Now I can trade with the Raiders, trade back to 4. I can still get the defensive lineman out of now. You're going to look at the defensive lineman out of Alabama, interior line, man can get after it.
Quinn and Williams.
You still got Quinn in there. You got some people on the board. And now you have another first-round pick, and you pick up another second-round pick. The Arizona's in a great spot. The Raiders are going to, they have too much in the first. They are going to move. They're going to make a move. So the Niners got to be – so this is going to be interesting how this all
works
out.
When was the last time a team made an aggressive play to move up in the first round for a non-quarterback? The first two that came to mind were Julio Jones and Sammy Watkins. Buffalo absolutely regrets – everyone who's come near Sammy Watkins regrets Sammy Watkins, right? I mean, that much is clear. But Julio Jones, you probably look back in hindsight and you're like, yeah,
that was
he
right.
gave up a lot. I mean, they came up from the 20s to get up in the top five.
You think about it, though, Joe.
But he still is an absolute beast.
The 1-2 Niners in Arizona – Arizona necessarily don't need a pass rusher, but they're saying they might do it. So now you're talking about you know the Niners do. So now your two guys are gone.
That's why Mel has Rashawn Gary, the pass rusher from Michigan, going to the Raiders. But you're figuring the Raiders, they want to do better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. You lost with Khalil Mack.
For the Niners.
Khalil Mack, you lost. You cannot take that chance of going and get a guy at number 3 in that situation. So you got to go up
Nothing
to Joey
like
Bosa.
Trading Khalil Mack away so that you can go out there and find, hopefully, the next Khalil Mack.
Pass rushers are hard to find, Joe.
Yeah.
We know this. We know this. It's a direct quote.
It's my favorite meme of all time. It was the Family Guy. It's Peter Griffin looking at the camera going, Khalil Mack is great, but draft picks can be anything. Draft picks can be Khalil Mack. All right, we've got plenty more to get to. We'll take calls on this. What do you think about this cockamamie scheme? 888-957-9570. That, what was the better moment last night, too? We started to touch on this morning. Steph bounce passing the alley-oop to Giannis, or Steph bounce passing the alley-oop to himself. The room is split. We need your help. The Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795, as well as 888-957-9570. All that.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
NBA All-Star Game breakdown in just a moment. But first, from Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Texas Rangers. He tweeted this out 3 minutes ago. Quote, Hunter Pence has a bit of a sore right shoulder. Rangers do not believe he will require an MRI, but he probably won't work out for a day or two or three. They're not even actually playing baseball yet. How do you get hurt not playing baseball? Did he get hurt stretching? You see, as much as everyone loves Hunter Pence, great guy, exciting player, very fan-friendly. It's over. It's over. And it's awesome that he wants to keep chasing this dream, and I know a lot of people would love to see him back with the Giants. He just got hurt not playing baseball. I mean, at what point do we realize it's time to pack it in?
I think coming up here in a couple of weeks. Did he hurt his shoulder opening his locker? Yes, 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 as he so famously likes to chant. Did he hurt his elbow signing his contract? Yes, yes, yes. Ultimately, you get to the end, and it's got to be hard to know. I don't know if it's fortunate that you were able to have a definitive end to your career, because I know it was injury low, but wouldn't that be better than having it be a question mark? Will I make the team? And then they kind of string you along. You were trying for a 17th year. You got hurt, and it was over. Is that better, you think, or having it be like a slow burn?
Well, I knew it was over when it happened. And you still have...
What was the injury, for those who don't know?
Ripped the hamstring.
Right off the bone.
Yeah, and when you know...
Right or left?
It's the left, yeah.
It's tough.
It's really tough.
Easier to come back from the right.
Always has been.
Oh, okay. Thank you for letting me know that, guys. Anywho, as I digest, and the text line, by the way, they don't like when we say anywho. It's tough.
Big
Joel.
Beef line call last week. Yeah. No more anywho.
No.
You guys button up. It's always anywho, anywho.
Right,
he laid out a really good case, and it was like, we probably do say that too much.
Maybe.
No more anywho.
Then he upticked us on the way out the door.
Ooh, that hurts.
That hurts.
And you have beef line for Kolsky. Was he able to?
Yeah, a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
okay, Kolsky. Good. Yeah, good.
We may or may not have nudged people in that direction.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
We did the nudge.
Anywho.
Anywho. Thank you.
Sure.
It's a situation where it's like a prize fighter. The greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, didn't know when to say when. Because in the back of your mind, you believe that you can pull back the time and you believe that you can go out there and do things that you think that you can do it. And you go out there and you show moments that you can. You have that one home run that keeps you around. You see it, man, people are like, God, there he is. Go 2 for 2 night. One night you're out there and you're doing it. And you're like, man, I got it. Then all of a sudden you go in a slump because you just don't have it. So those one moments, because you're great enough, Michael Jordan at the end of his career goes out and scores 44. His better years was behind him, but you still, for one moment or for a time, you have those nights that you can turn back the clock, and it makes you feel like you have it. And this is what Hunter Pence is dealing with, Joe. At times, he's going out there to batting practice. He's going, he's eating well. He's doing all these great things, feeling good. He's training, doing all the things he needs to do. And those moments, he's out there, and he's like, wow, I still got it. I'm still that prize fighter. But in the back of your mind, you're wondering, when is it over? And it's hard. It's hard for guys to do it. It's hard for guys to understand that the end is there. And so that's why you have a guy like Hunter still out there chasing it. And at times, guys, he has those moments, and that's what keeps him coming back.
You mentioned Muhammad Ali. I have to bring this up quickly. Bill Simmons just had Bob Arum, the famous boxing promoter, on his podcast last week. I listened to it over the weekend. It's basically an hour and 40 minutes of exceptional storytelling. Arum is 87. He's sharp as a tack. Simmons is just weaving him in and out of different conversations. And Arum is telling these fantastic stories. And one of the stories was about Muhammad Ali earlier in his career. I can't remember who the fight was against. I almost want to say it was the Charlie Powell fight when he went to 17-0, but I'm not positive. In fact, it couldn't have been because that was in Pittsburgh. It was a fight that took place in Texas, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is Ali was very big on abstaining from any, shall we say, romantic encounters in the buildup to a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Women weaken legs. We all know this. A lot of athletes, there's science and there's studies out there that say it doesn't matter. But a lot of guys stay away from the women, stay away from any sort of romantic endeavors, focus on the task at hand, and then you can handle your business afterwards. Ali found himself in a situation before one of these fights where
Ali,
a provocative young lady was able to, convince him spend some time together the night before the fight. And Ali, couldn't control himself. And afterwards, he was panicking. He's like, I've lost the fight. I've ruined my career. I can't believe I did this. And Aram's like, just calm down. Calm down. We'll figure it out. And Arum orders 12 raw eggs from room service.
Oh, yeah.
And he has him eat 12 raw eggs. And then he says, now look. And he talks about whoever the opponent is. I don't know. It wasn't one of his major fights.
Yeah.
He says, now look. Don't screw around with this guy. You're not going to have the energy. You got to put him down early. So Ali changes his entire game plan. Rather than go out and do what he normally does, he just goes in full attack mode. He eats the eggs. He gets some sleep. He knocks the guy out, I believe, in the fourth round. It was a fourth round stoppage. And afterwards, he's crying and he's hugging Arum. He's like, you saved my career, Bob. You saved my career. Thank you so much.
With a dozen eggs and a new game plan.
A dozen eggs. And just get out there and finish him early. And he knocked him out in the fourth.
Oh, my. That's a great story.
Oh, what was the fight?
Great
I mean.
Story. But I can see that, though. You got Ali thinking, oh, my God. And you see a lot of fighters still. They eat the raw eggs. They say, you saw the Rocky movie. Have an egg, Rock.
Right.
Here, have a couple of them. And
yeah, I'm glad we've progressed to a point where we're not doing that anymore. Raw eggs.
So. People
Cleveland still... Williams, TKO third round. Got it. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
Because I know you're a boxing fan. I wanted to get you the details.
Oh, my God.
He went
God.
To 27-0. It was November 14th, 1966. He retained the WBC, the ring, and lineal heavyweight titles. It was at the Astrodome. Third round, knocked him out in it was stopped at a minute eight in, November 14th, 1966.
Go all out. Knock him out. You get so Bob Cotton believed it too. So he was on that. I mean, a lot of work guys believe that crap. So Bob's like, here, eat these 12 eggs. Oh my God, he must have just had gas like out of his
no
you
doubt.
Know what. So he's like, let's go out
here. Thanks for the analysis.
And we actually do know out the you know what, by the way. The only place it does come out. So
anywho.
that was a great story, by the way.
He fought Cleveland Williams and he beat Ernie Terrell, Zora Foley, and then that was it. He was gone for 3 years. March 22nd, 1967, all the way until October 26, 1970, when he fought Jerry Quarry. That was the whole thing with everything that was going on. But he panicked, and it was he's like, finish him early. And he went out there, and he took care of business.
Crying
third round stoppage.
Hugging him after the fight. You saved my career.
No doubt.
All right, let's get down to business.
Yes.
Two major moments from last night's NBA All-Star game, won by Team LeBron. Final score, 178 to 164. Team LeBron overcame a 20-point deficit. They gave up 95 points in the first half. They locked down Team Giannis in the second half, giving up just 69 points en route to a 14-point victory. They hit 35 threes in the game. That's an all-star record. Kevin Durant was named your MVP for the second time in his career. He won All-Star Game MVP back in 2012. He had a big night, 31 points on 10 of 15 shooting. Durant now has two All-Star MVPs, two Finals MVPs, and one regular season MVP. Only five other players have recorded that feat: Shaq, Kobe, MJ, LeBron, and Magic. So Kevin Durant up there with some elite company. But two plays we want to focus on, both featuring Wardell, Stephen Curry. Play number one, let's hear it.
Here's Curry with a high bounce pass.
Reggie Miller loves it. Chris Webber loves it. And then at the end of the game, Steph Curry to himself.
So Team LeBron will make it two straight victory. Oh, Curry.
All right, we got to get to the bottom of this. And John Heyman's going to join us in 5 minutes to talk Bryce Harper. So we have 5 minutes to do it. Steph's bounce pass alley-oop to Giannis, or Steph's bounce pass reverse dunk to himself? What was a better play last night?
The bounce pass to Giannis, because there was actually a whiff of defense involved, and you see Kevin Durant think about going up to try to challenge the bounce pass, and he quickly realizes that he can't get to the pass, and something is lurking behind him that he wants no part of, and that something is the Greek Freak coming downhill from about 15 feet in the air. So as much as the Steph dunk was sweet, and it was better than any dunk really in the dunk contest, shout out Amadou Diallo of OKC and a nice win, jumping over Shaq with a little bit of help. The Curry dunk was sweet, but the Giannis bounce pass dunk was something we'd never seen. So I favor that one slightly over the Curry dunk.
It's the Curry dunk. It was so sweet. It was so neat. It almost put you know what to sleep. I mean, that was absolutely amazing, because you don't get to see Steph do what he does. You see Giannis throws the ball down. Giannis does that. He slams like that night in and night out. He can get more air. He can darn near fly. That's unbelievable. But Steph Curry, here's a guy we never hardly see slam the ball. Very, very rarely.
Last time he tried to do it, he slipped and fell.
Slipped it. Yeah. I've fallen and I can't get up. I mean, you saw him. He throws it off the backboard. He comes in, a little reverse slam. You got to say that was awesome. I wish he would have did that earlier in the game. It was almost the end of the game, so the guys are winding it up. So if he would have did it earlier, I think it would have had way more effect. But I thought, for me, by far that was.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
What makes the Giannis alley-oop so great? Is it the pass? Because Giannis didn't do anything special. He was right there by the rim. He's a freak of talent already in terms of size and jumping ability. So he jogs in, he's in position, no one's boxing him out. He goes up, perfect timing, and slams it down. It's a beautiful play, but it's all pass, right? Like 95% of what makes that play great is the pass, is it not?
No, it's 50-50, because the pass is incredible, but the pass is only so incredible because Giannis is able to go up and get it where he gets it. If he would have let the ball fall down next to the rim and maybe he grabs it with two hands and he double clutch dunks it, we're not thinking about the pass as much as we are because of what he did with it. He went up and he high pointed it and he threw it straight down. And the fact that KD was kind of in the middle and Steph, to bounce the ball that hard and have Giannis still be able to go up and get it.
So accurate, too.
Yeah, it was just a remarkable feat, I think, on both ends. The Curry dunk, it was great. He bounced past it perfectly. And by the way, I don't know how much he practices that dunk. Probably not a lot. You don't see Steph a lot of videos of him dunking in practice. It was an impressive dunk, but there was no defense.
See, that's the distinguishing factor for me, though. I know Steph is a great passer, and I know Giannis can get up. I saw that. It was awesome to see. This is what makes the All-Star game so fun, because the next day we're talking about moments like this. But I didn't know Steph could do that. I saw him going for it, and I figure maybe he goes up and gets it, and it's just the one-handed slam, face forward. Right. Oh, hey, nice way to exit the game. He goes reverse on it. I didn't know he was capable of that. That's what gives it the edge for me, is that I had no idea that was in his arsenal. I've seen his arsenal. It's a robust arsenal. I didn't know it had that.
Yeah, well,
I didn't. It blew me away to see that.
And
you got to look at Kawhi in the video in the background. He's staring, and in typical Kawhi fashion, it's like his brain tells him, you have to do something. So he just starts clapping. It's like this odd slow clap as Anthony Davis's jaw hits the floor. You got to go watch the replay of this.
It was amazing. The throw it to yourself and then reverse. That was by far. And you ask which one's more amazing. Yeah, Giannis getting up was pretty amazing, but it was the bounce pass itself. If you ask which was greater between Giannis slam or Steph's pass, the bounce pass, to be able to get that ball over KD's head, then the way that which you, there's not a lot of people that can throw that, bounce that ball like that. So, for me, by far, Giannis' slam, he can fly, we get that, but the pass, the bounce was just unreal.
If you were starting a beer pong team right now, you could have anyone in the world on your team. Is Steph Curry your first pick?
Outside of any possible dart-throwing champions from England you'd have to review the tape on, because the dart thrower is basically the same as beer pong, but not knowing who any of them are, I would go Steph Curry.
No. Because here's Steph Curry, if he trains for any of that, the beer pong and all that crap, his hand and eye coordination,
it's incredible.
It's freaking incredible. I mean, what he does with the three ball, you saw what he did to Clay draws.
Poor Clay.
Yakum.
Poor Clay. According to Steph, he fell asleep for a hot minute and Steph took advantage. Oh, my God.
Clay said, now I know what it's like.
Tell me.
Now I know what it's like.
Clay.
Tell me.
I'm a...
To the phones we go. MLB Insider for the MLB Network. Ladies and gentlemen, John Heyman joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, thank you so much for your time this morning. It is greatly appreciated. Take us through what your life has been like these last 72 hours. As one of the game's premier reporters, one of the game's premier news guys, are you just constantly staring at a phone, constantly working the phones, trying to figure out what's happening with Bryce Harper and Manny Machado?
Yeah, that about sums it up. Just working the phones, texting, tweeting, not sleeping a lot. I was doing good up until a few days ago, but it seems like things are heating up, particularly with Bryce.
It'd probably be nice for you to get this thing done with spring training now getting under full swing. Your indications, where do you think that Bryce Harper is headed at this late hour right now? Is it Philadelphia is the favorite, or the Padres is a real player? And have the Giants totally fallen out of the sweepstakes?
Yeah, I think the Phillies are still the favorite. I think they've been the favorite for a while. Their owner came out and said that they want to spend stupid money. They have acquired a shortstop already in Gene Segura and made a trade to do that. So they're pretty full on the left side of the infield. I guess they could trade Michael Franco, but they still have Kingery there. So their focus appears to be on Harper, and they have the most money to spend. So I think they have always been the favorite, but I think there's clearly competition. I think it's intensifying now, and all the teams that we've heard, I think, are the main teams. The Padres, the Giants, and the White Sox are the other teams for Harper. The Nats, perhaps. I haven't heard a lot about them lately, but they're the incumbent team, so I'm not going to rule them out. But, I know they've been getting a lot of calls, and I know teams are checking in, but I think those are the main teams. Those are the teams that are really willing to talk about the long deal, I believe. I think teams like the Braves check in, perhaps the Cardinals, other teams, but that's probably only because it's gone this far and they're thinking, well, maybe there's a bargain out there. But I don't think there will be a bargain out there. He may not get exactly what he wanted, but he's going to get a long deal and a big deal.
What would the Giants have to do to get back in the conversation? Their odds came out. They were a favorite, but now it seems it's Philly creep back in. How much of an overpay and going over luxury tax would they have to do in order to get Harper?
Yeah, I mean, I think the deal is the big thing with just about all free agents, not all, but the players generally go for the best deal. We saw that with Cano. We saw that with Pujols. We saw that with A-Rod. You know, these guys who get the $200 million, and, you know, there's been a lot of talk for a long time about whether Harper's going to get $300 million or $400 million. And, I mean, this is ingrained in his mind now, and I think he's not unusual in that he's probably going for the best deal. So if they have the best deal, they can get him, I do believe. But, you know, there are other factors. I think that Harper probably likes the West Coast more than Machado. Being from Las Vegas and knowing that he does like California, so I think that's a help. I think the ballpark is probably a little bit of an impediment for them. It's a tough park for left-handed hitters other than Barry Bonds, as you guys well know. And this is a guy who wants to be in the Hall of Fame. So I think that's a consideration as well. So you got the city, which I think is a plus, and the ballpark, which I think is beautiful, and it's a great place to go and watch a game, maybe the best in baseball. They put on quite a show there. But when you're talking about ballpark for a left-handed slugger, it's probably looked on as a negative. So they got a couple, a positive and a negative. And, you know, I think in the end, the money will be the main thing. So I'm not ruling them out. While we say the Phillies are the favorite, doesn't mean that it's a slam dunk and they're going to get them.
John Heyman, MLB insider for the MLB Network, with us here on 95.7 The Game. Was there ever any consideration in Harper's camp for a short-term deal? I mean, I know we were all throwing around crazy numbers. 2 years, $80 million. Is that something he would have considered? Is that something that would have gotten the job done anywhere?
I don't believe so, no. I think he was only looking long-term, and we're talking long-term. I mean, I think that he and Machado were both looking at top. Stanton's 325, but, you know, I think Harper's going to come close if he doesn't get there in the 300 range. It's hard to give up a guaranteed 300 to go for a shorter deal, particularly when almost all these big deals now include an opt-out after a few years. So you still have the option of short if you're the player, whereas you still have the guarantee of the big, big bucks. So I don't believe that 80 for 2 or anything like that. That's a nice guess, but I don't see that as anything that would have enticed him. And I do and I've heard that speculation with the Giants that they were interested in that, even above and beyond the reports. I have heard that secondhand, but I think for them to have gotten the meeting that they got, I think they needed to probably qualify and have not be afraid to go long. And so I'm sure that they have indicated they are willing to go long under some circumstances. Does that mean they're going to beat out the Phillies? I don't think there's a great chance of it, but as I said, not ruling it out. They're one of five teams, I think, still in the mix logically.
If they do miss out on Bryce Harper, having missed out on Giancarlo Stanton last year, how much of this is a rebuke on the organization as a whole to have been in on two of the big free agents and possibly missed out on both?
Yeah, I don't look at it like that. I know the Cardinals were obviously they wanted to keep Pujols, and they tried for David Price and Jason Hayward, and they didn't get the players. And I think that's a great organization, too. I don't think it's anything negative about the organization. Obviously, the Giants have done a fantastic job overall from a business standpoint, won 3 World Series. Right now, they don't look like a contender. That could be another factor. So I'm not going to say that's a rebuke on the organization, though. I would say, you know, that could be one of the factors that Philly looks a little bit more competitive right now than San Francisco or San Diego or the White Sox. So I'm not ruling anybody out for Harper. I know the White Sox and San Diego have been tied more to Machado, but San Diego, by my understanding, has actually offered more to Harper. I think people are coming under the realization now that Harper will get more, and that's just the way it's going to be. I did a poll late in the season. I think it was about 18 executives. Who's going to get more? And two-thirds of them said Machado. So I think two-thirds of them are going to end up being wrong, because I do think Harper will break the 300, whereas it doesn't appear that Machado will, but he'll probably get very close.
When you look at the organization, the Giants organization, that is, Farhan's now running the show. What would be the best if you're in his situation, you're in his seat? Do you go after a big name to put butts in the seats, or how do you go about this building process if you're the San Francisco Giants?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going about it the right way. I think he's looking for opportunities and deals, and I think he's brought in guys on very reasonable contracts that will probably outperform those contracts. I like Parra. I like Solarte. Pomerantz could bounce back. Holland did a nice job last year. Obviously, they're not spending big bucks to this point, but I think generally they're being realistic. Now, the Giants have been an organization that does look at the bottom line, has done a terrific job from a business standpoint, and has gone out and tried to get the big superstars. Obviously, they did get Bonds, and they kept him for a long time. Missed out on a couple others, but they're a team that looks above and beyond the guy's playing record, beyond the back of his baseball card. And I think that's part of the intrigue with Harper, that he will add some cachet, got a good Q rating. I think Machado, for the most part, famous guy, sure, but mostly you're paying for a great ball player with Machado. Harper, you get a little bit extra, and I think that's why they're focused more on Harper, plus the fact that they're positionally outfield fits them better as well. And Farhan had Manny Machado with the Dodgers, and you know, I couldn't speak to Farhan's position, but I had the feeling covering the World Series and the playoffs that the Dodgers were not necessarily enamored with Machado in general.
John Heyman, MLB Network, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. This is now 2 years in a row. The big-name free agents have taken quite a while to sign. I read this somewhere on Twitter that there's a theory, and maybe not a theory, but I think an unnamed player told a reporter this, that basically everybody's got their algorithms now. So every player who speaks with a team is being offered close to the same money. It's basically like you show up and, well, our algorithm points to 3 years, $30 million. And that's just how it is. And because everyone's working off some of the same data points, everyone's making the same offers, and thus baseball is realizing that there isn't as much money to go around like there was with Stanton. Teams don't want to get locked into these long-term deals where a player could get hurt or could regress. Ryan Howard, Albert Pujols, is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I think there are several factors at play, and the data and the algorithms clearly are one or two of them, depending on how you want to look at it. I think generally right now we have a very smart, very cautious group of young executives that's wielding the power, that has the algorithms, that has the data, and I think some emotion has been taken out of it. Obviously, George Steinbrenner has passed on. Mike Ilitch has passed on. Some of the owners really put winning above profit, and good for them for doing that. And, you know, I put the Giants in the category of a team that really has tried to win and delivered. So I give them credit as well. And they've probably had some emotional buys too. But, you know, maybe not to the extent we probably wouldn't see a Prince Fielder get $214 million, that type of player, anymore. The emotion came in there. Ilitch saw the injury of Victor Martinez and said, well, Prince is still out there. I got to have him, and overpaid pretty wildly, as it turns out, for Prince Fielder. You know, Albert Pujols, 32 years old. I don't think there's any algorithm going to tell you that that's worth a 10-year deal anymore. I think that I don't think you need a sophisticated computer to tell you that's probably not worth it. It is a little curious that last year was the fourth year out of 50 that the salaries have gone down, and this year could be the fifth year out of 51 when we know the revenues are going up. But, you know, it is a business. I'm a little sad that the emotion's been taken out of it, but I think that's one of the major factors, and the ones you mentioned, another major factor there.
MLB Insider for the MLB Network, John Heyman with us here on 95.7 The Game. John, we know you're very busy. Thank you so much for taking some time to speak with us today. Good luck with the Harper and Machado stories, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
All right, that sounds great, guys. See you later.
See, I don't know how to feel about this, because I'm all for efficiency. I'm all for taking a system and trying to improve upon it. That's what we should be doing with everything. Don't focus on the result. Focus on the process. How can you improve the process? And baseball seems to have taken a few gigantic steps forward the last few years. And you can probably thank Billy Beane for this. Essentially, you have 30 MLB clubs now that, like Heyman said, there's no real emotion coming to this in terms of certain players that would be loved or guys that have done so great for the organization. Let's go above and beyond. Bottom line, everyone is working off an algorithm, and they take a player and they take his age and they take his production and his position, and they plug it in to the algorithm, and it spits back a number, and it tells you he's worth 4 years, $40 million. And then you make that offer to the player, and the player may have been expecting $80 or $85 million because these guys used to get more, and they think, no, thank you. And they move on to the next thing. And the next team tells him the same thing. And the next team tells him the same thing. And they all have the same comment. This is what our algorithm says you're worth. And one of the players had said this recently. I wish I could find where I stumbled across this. But it got me thinking, if everybody's working off this formula, baseball has now gotten to a point where it can truly zero in and quantify what you are worth to the lineup. Gone are the days of Ryan Howard getting this ridiculous deal because he helped the team win a World Series. No, we're not going to give you 10 years, $250 million Robinson Cano because you played well with the Yankees and you're going to turn things around. Your production is worth this. No emotion, no guesswork. We're going to go ahead. We're going to plug the numbers into the system, and this is what we're going to get. And the players aren't happy with it because it's hurting them. So on one hand, you have a sport that's getting more advanced, more efficient, and smarter, but it's also taking some of the fun out of all of it. And it's, I don't want to say hurting the players, but it's at least getting them to rethink how all this plays out. Well, it's a very interesting time to be following Major League Baseball.
It really is, Joe. And that's why me and Daniel, we differ from this. That's why I say players, take what you can, get what you can, and don't have any loyalty. Because now you're getting to see, like you're talking about, how they're taking the emotions out no matter what you did in the past or previous. Now it's like, I don't care. We're going to plug this in, and this is how you are. You're a piece of meat. We don't care what you've done. I don't care. Look, you're getting older. We're going to change it. We're going to change the way we view you. We're going to change it, and we don't care what you do. You can kick. You can scream. We don't care.
You are nothing more than box A3 on my Excel spreadsheet.
That's exactly how it is.
In the first one, you don't put anything, and then the second one, you put name, and then the third one, you put that guy's name.
And that's what baseball's deciding to do. When you do that, though, you take away some of the guy's emotions. You take away their value, and now you look at it, and you say, okay, now they see what they are. And now I think that you look at, and you look at football, and yeah, that's why I think I'm glad when I see players get what they can. I just, you know, they need to do it the right way. But here's a sport that's still exciting. You're playing because fans want to see those particular players. They want, and ownership understands. It's not necessarily about what the player can do, but also about the excitement they can bring. It's not necessarily they're going to give us more wins, but are they exciting? Do they help put butts in a seat? They like the way they dance. They like all those different things. And that's why baseball, if you are going to do certain things, let guys be. Like you're talking about, the bat flip. Give them, let people entertain. Look at now the end zone dance, all the different stuff that's going on around the league. I don't necessarily didn't do it, but now you see it's a thing. High school kids are doing it. Pee wee kids are doing it. Pop Warner. People are looking at these guys and they love it. I mean, they have awards for it. Look at this. So when you look at baseball, it's still stuck in this era. And now you're not able to flip the bat, you know, do certain things to bring more excitement, get the fans behind it. And now all of a sudden, now you're looking at guys and slotting them a certain way. It's like being slotted now as players. And now they're slotted and they're not going to be able to break the bank and make the money that they think.
Well, look no further than the San Francisco Giants and their contracts and the deals they gave to players such as Matt Cain. Thank you contract. 5 years and $90 million when he was going to be past his prime. Yeah. And it happened sooner than you thought if you were a Giants fan. But you look at the deals that they continually have given to players on the back of success, and it makes perfect sense that they would want to shift the paradigm and go in a different direction. Because you look at all those deals that they have right now, Buster Posey's contract, Evan Longoria, Johnny Cueto, as we like to say, who has a player opt in. John Heyman was talking about the new deals with the players able to opt in or opt out. It gets yourself into a tough situation. So if you look at Bryce Harper and you offer him 10 years and $300 million, and you think, well, this is about as can't miss as possible. The first 5 years look good, but what are the second 5 years going to look like from that algorithmic standpoint? So to me, it makes perfect sense that ownership is withdrawing a little bit from some of these mega deals because it's too risky for the team to extend yourself that far out when the contracts are guaranteed.
That's why
it's almost shocking that it took so long to understand one of the most widely accepted investment principles, which is diversify your portfolio. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And yet routinely, Seattle Mariner type teams have come out and said, Robinson Cano, here's everything. Philadelphia Phillies to Ryan Howard, here's everything. Making these massive deals, the Albert Pujols to the Angels deal. The day that was signed, Pujols was one of the best, if not the best players in baseball. But everyone looked at that, much like they did the Cabrera deal in Detroit, and you thought, this is going to be a disaster at the end.
Right,
it's going to be a disaster. Right. Look at the Chris Paul deal in basketball. Right. The $40 million a year for the next 3 years after this year.
Wow.
That deal wasn't worth it when you offered it to him.
Yep.
Everyone knew. But you probably behind closed doors were like, look, you come with us now, we'll have your rights. When you become a free agent, we'll go ahead and pay you. And then he broke down again, and it was like,
what do we do?
We can't go back on our word. So we're going to give you 200 plus over the next four, and we're just going to have to live with that contract. The Wizards did that with John Wall. That extension hasn't even started yet. They want him gone, and the extension hasn't started. I didn't say ended. It hasn't started yet.
And he doesn't want to leave now because he understands he ain't going to get that.
Who, John Wall?
Yeah. He said, oh,
nobody talks about John Wall anymore.
That's why he says he wants to stay there, because he understands some of these guys, they get it. So that's my point with baseball. Baseball needs to correct itself. You're correcting yourself on the back end. Now correct yourself on the front end or the middle part of this thing. You know, when you read a book, you got the introduction, you got the body, and you got the conclusion.
The denouement.
You know, so when you're doing these things, start with letting guys go 6 years. So now say, okay, let's shorten that. So now at the age of 24, you know, 23, 24, now you can give these guys those long-term deals and maybe come down a little bit, but then they're going to be able to perform at a higher level than giving these guys a deal, you know, at 29, and then you got to give them a 10-year deal and they're 37, 38 years old, and you expect these guys to hit 30, 40 home runs.
But the way it works now, Lo, and Joe has touched on this before, and look at a guy like Joey Bart, who's 22 years old right now.
Coming up in 9:10 this morning, you will hear from Joey Bart.
I look forward, and, you know, maybe we can ask him about when he's going to get his first 10-year deal, but maybe we'll hold off
until
our second interview.
Yeah.
22 years old. So he's going to play this year, and he probably won't make it to the big league club. Maybe he does at the end of the year, and that starts his service time. Well, the Giants then have 5 years before he has to hit the open market. He's got arbitration years, et cetera, da, da, da. So it's likely that he won't be 27, 28 at the earliest until he can get out there on the open market. So these teams, they have a greater ability to control their players, keep them in the minors, stretch their service time out to where they don't really get two big contract cycles. They usually only get one.
Look at guys like Steven Vogt and Chris Davis.
Oh, poor Vogt.
Vogt blew up a couple years ago with the A's, and it was like, all right, this is looking good. His clock had just started, and he was about to turn 30.
I know.
And he could see the writing on the wall. He knew the organization he played for. He knew how this was going to play out. By the time he even thinks about getting to free agency, he's probably not even going to have much of a major league career anymore.
Absolutely. And
Chris Davis is what, going to be 31 if he's not already? And he's still a few years away. I mean, you know, arbitration and everything's favorable. It's not like we're going to shed tears for
him. No, I get it, but
that's the system. Harper and Machado were supposed to be the guys that started really young, got called up right away, played unbelievable baseball, and then right in the sweet spot of their career at 26 years of age, when you know a 10-year deal isn't that bad. I mean, barring ridiculous injury, playing till 36 isn't the end of the world.
Look at
Chase Utley and some of these guys, how far they've stretched it. So you go 26 to 36 to $300 million. Plus, imagine if 5 years down the road you had to sign him. The value would have been through the roof. Even on the back end, it's not going to be that much money.
And
no one wants to pay it.
And
he doesn't get more than Giancarlo Stanton. That's shocking to me because Stanton isn't that great. He hits home runs, and, you know, when he doesn't, he was nothing in the playoffs. Yeah. Nothing.
And I think that's what's going to hurt baseball, because now what incentivized guys? Guys now saying, wow, so the league is saying, you know what, we're still going to be able to control you. Here's Bryce Harper. Let's take this, for instance. Here's a guy that now he's at the prime. He's at the peak. He should be one of those guys, 26 years old. We should be able to pay him the world because he's got 10 years, and we know this guy's still going to play at a high level. They said, no. Let's stay in the deal. So now how are you incentivizing these young guys to come up any earlier, even if they start their clock earlier? Now you have them in a sweet spot, and you're showing to the guys in their sweet spot. And then, and now the major, now the association, you look at Major League Baseball, the MLB is saying, no, we're still not going to do it. So it is a sort of control. So what is incentivizing guys even to come even earlier now? Because these guys, the two you just alluded to, Joe, they're in the sweet part. They're in their money-making. They're in the body.
Right.
That's the book supposed to be really good and juicy.
But they're
now
not getting it. And that's why in 2021 you're looking at a labor stoppage. You might be looking at an entire season going away because the players see this. And
gone.
The players see the situation where they should be getting the big contracts now, but they're not. And it's not necessarily collusion. It's just a resetting of the market. So the players have to find a way to reset it on their own terms so that maybe it's service time or maybe it's different things that they get back.
But in order to do that, you have to give something up. And the two things owners would want would be A, no longer guaranteed deals, and B, a salary cap. Like, that's essentially what that comes down to. If you're a Major League Baseball player and you have a problem with the way things are done, whether it be the 6 years to get to free agency or whether it be the way you're being treated once you do get to free agency, okay, they might be able to do something like that. Maybe your service time starts after 2 years, right? 2 years in, and then you can hit free agency. But we don't want a luxury tax at $205 million. We want a hard cap at $140 million. And then it's like, well, okay, I can make some money earlier, which is nice, but I also can't make as much. And granted, we're sitting here looking at the Bryce Harper deal and thinking that's a problem, but he's probably still about to get $300 million fully guaranteed. All right, Bryce.
That's a good day.
We'll give you 10 years, $400 million, but it's guaranteed for injury like in the NFL. So 3 years in, we don't like the deal, we can cut you, and we have a dead cap number. What would you rather deal with? I think ultimately the scenario you want is the NBA, but again, it's only, what, a 12, 13, 14 player roster that you're dealing with. You're paying a couple stars and that's it, unless, of course, you're the Warriors. Would you rather have the NFL system or the MLB system?
MLB. I mean, you got
to. So we sit here nitpicking all of it, but then at the end of the day, it's still pretty.
Well, it depends on if you're a rank and file guy, because if you're a rank and file baseball guy making $280,000 and maybe you have a 4 year deal worth $2 million maximum and they hold your rights, you're kind of hamstrung.
Yeah.
If you're a superstar.
There are more rank and file guys than there are superstars, right?
Absolutely.
So you would probably want to listen to the rank and file guys will make up more of the vote, but they're not the ones that are as important. You want to hear from the superstars.
Yeah, you do.
These are great problems to have. These are rich people problems.
RPP.
Yeah, it really is. The guy's going to get $300 million and we're complaining about it. $300 million.
System's broken.
That's a lot of jack.
That's what Scott Boras has the audacity to go out there and say, because he's going to look like a fool if he can't get more than Stanton. This has been the deal he's been looking at as his Mona Lisa. This was going to be his Mona Lisa. And right now, if it doesn't top Stanton, even if it does top Stanton, it's not going to be the numbers that everyone was expecting originally. And he's going to have to sell that to players when they're like, man, remember when everyone thought it was going to be $500 million? I don't know if you want to sign with this guy.
And much like the Mona Lisa, overrated. The Boras negotiation is just like the painting, which is just a kind of a dull painting of...
Why is it overrated?
It's completely overrated.
Haven't you heard all the conspiracy theories behind it, that it might actually be him? There's so much mystique surrounding the painting. How could it be overrated?
It might actually be the artist himself.
Yeah.
His depiction.
That he was painting himself as a woman.
Incredible. I've never heard the gender bending controversy.
Play your little Chuck backing up sound.
I'm not
suddenly
backing
now,
up.
Yeah. Suddenly now, it's not. Oh, yeah. I don't want old Chucklehead. Right.
Yeah. The buttons are next to each other. You understand. A lot of buttons over here. You got to keep Chucklehead really close just when you need him.
That's not old Chucklehead.
That's old Low.
The one where he's Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, that's.
That's old Chucklehead.
And you also have the.
I'm trying to think of what he says after when he's done laughing there. Because he says, you know what, Dibs? You're a real piece of work.
Pretty good. Yeah.
You know what, Dibs? You're a real piece of
that
work.
That was nice, Joe.
That was go to hell, Dibs.
That's the one where go to hell, Dibs.
And you too, Joe.
They're always.
Oh, man. All right. Right. So, if you have to pick over under tomorrow at noon,
yeah.
Harper signs, prison bet. What are you going with?
Under. I think it happens today.
You're going to have to say over under. Tomorrow at noon. Noon Pacific.
Over. It's not happening. It's all smoke and mirrors. Can't you guys see that by now? What the hell you guys think? They're going to give him $300 million. You guys really think it's right? That's going
to
happen?
They don't have to give him $300 million today.
Listen.
They don't have to back the Brinks truck up and give him $300 million.
You got to back up. Don't make me up, sucker. Here's what you got to realize. If he signs, it's not going to be for $300 million. So if you're saying it's over, under for that, then it's going to be over because he's not going to sign for over $300 million tomorrow.
Man, once you sign your name on that line, that has got to be the biggest exhale of your entire life. Like, there are exhales on Maury Povich that are big exhales. You are not the father. Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God.
Yeah, no.
Baby, I love you. Let's get married.
Exactly.
That's, like, wait,
that's a big
exhale. What are you doing, buddy?
Right, right, right.
That's Maury. Like, this one is you sign it, it's,
$300 million. Yeah. It's just like, well, okay.
I'm going to go get myself arrested tonight.
I'm talking, man, I'm just going to chill.
Right now, he's just waiting to exhale. Whitney Houston.
I'm going to go by Delaware.
Okay.
Saw it off into the ocean.
Straight up Delaware.
Just for fun. Yeah. See you, Delaware. Yeah. Actually, by Delaware, and then saw it off into the ocean, and then it becomes the Atlantic's Hawaii, also known as Bermuda.
Wow. That was incredible.
Yeah. You have all this beachfront property. Suddenly, now that's an investment. You got to buy Delaware and then cut it off, send it out into the ocean. Yeah, new Hawaii. Who says no?
Wow.
all the corporations that are, you know, fake located in Delaware.
Yeah, and do you have to, like, build a giant anchor to keep that thing close enough to the coast? You can still access it, you just let it drift?
It's the Maldives. Eventually it goes under, but it's nice until that day happens.
Nice, and then you can write it off as a business loss.
Well, once you...
Sunken cost.
Totally, literally.
But once you cut it off and it floats into the ocean, probably tip over and the waves and things would just take it out.
That's such an absurd comment. A state like Delaware tipping over in the waves.
Makes no sense at all.
Everything was going so swimmingly until
it was going good.
That, you know, ridiculous assertion.
That's got to be 5
Thank
yards.
Thank God we're done. Thank God
don't
we're
yuck
done.
My Second, yum.
What if the weather gets really bad and then they flood there? Okay. It's out
Mark Wahlberg in Perfect Storm.
Yeah.
Him and George Clooney.
Oh, that was great.
Didn't end well. Spoiler. No. Spoiler, if you find yourself in the middle of something called The Perfect Storm, chances are you aren't going to win
Delaware's
that one.
Delaware's not going to win that one at all.
All right. Joey Bart, the number 2 overall pick from the 2018 Major League Baseball draft. The future of the San Francisco Giants coming up next. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.